together, Eric Laurie and Joe Reed.
Thank you very much. So this is some work done by myself and Eric, my co-author here. And it's about video games. So this talk's based on a book chapter writing at the moment for a forthcoming book called Video at Work, Praxeological Aspects of Media Production. And this book's concerned with the ways in which different forms of videos and displays of video feature in social interactions. Some of our work on games is also featured in a prior journal paper from a few years ago, which I've noted down there. So this talk is kind of some, as I said, sort of developing work at the moment, and we'd be really interested to get your views on the kind of things we're presenting here. It's about video games. It's about how we play these games together. And in particular, it's concerned with the role of the virtual camera in these games. Now, this talk uses a couple of fragments from our data sets, which feature in this chapter and journal paper. Okay, so we start with the question, which is about how gameplay is visually accomplished. So although we're looking at understanding the ways in which gameplay is achieved and socially organised through bodily action and talk, here we're wanting to examine a really sort of pervasively important feature of gameplay, how gameplay is also a visual accomplishment. So I'll just familiarise ourselves with the kinds of settings that we're interested in looking at. So a basic game setup, as you can see with Eric and his son here, involves a graphical display and a controller of some kind. And there's what's rendered graphically on this display, on this physical display. And this display may include various sort of things like players' status, their health, items of inventory, and so on. But for games which use 3D, and that's a lot of them nowadays, there's also this virtual camera which provides perspectives into the virtual game environment as it gets displayed on the screen. Now, the virtual camera and its role in game interactions is what we're interested in here. And understanding how this rendered perspective is both manipulated and also provides resources for gameplay and social interaction. Okay, so we sort of looked so far at two types of games which use 3D environments and virtual cameras in slightly different ways. So the first sort of game we'll look at is a first-person perspective game. So this provides a sort of point of view perspective on the 3D environment, and the player sort of sees through the eyes of their character or avatar. The virtual camera in these sorts of games is coupled mostly quite tightly to the player's actions at the controls, that's keyboard and mouse. The other sort of type of game we'll look at is third-person perspective games. These provide a sort of a disembodied perspective of the 3D environment. So in these kind of games, the player sees their character or avatar, virtual embodiment, from above and behind. And in these sorts of games, the virtual camera is only loosely coupled to the player's actions at the controls, so the keyboard and mouse. And during moments when the virtual camera is not directly controlled by the player, it's usually sort of automatically controlled by the game. So this is in order to sort of keep up with player movement and so on. And we'll sort of see some examples of that shortly. Okay, so I'm just going to describe what sort of data we'll be looking at before we actually see it. And in doing this work, we've actually tended to sort of study ourselves. So we've started to sort of study ourselves playing games as well as watching other people play games at the same time. So this fragment is from someone playing Counter-Strike Source, and there's this player and a researcher sitting next to the player, and the researcher is me, as you'll hear in a moment. This game that's being played is a first-person perspective shooter, so it's basically, if you haven't played these sorts of games, essentially guns and shooting enemy players. It's quite simple. In this fragment, the player has a sniper rifle, so this modifies the properties of this virtual camera as it's rendered to the graphical display. So looking through the scope of the sniper rifle modifies the graphical display by introducing this kind of circular window, which you can see on the top right, as opposed to a full screen view, and I'll give an example of that in a moment. So in looking through the scope of the sniper rifle, the player's perspective is oriented down the end of an underpass in this virtual environment, which we'll see. There's kind of a tunnel with a ramp. And during this fragment, the researcher, I'll just refer to it as a researcher because otherwise it's far too confusing. So the researcher will inquire as to what can be seen down the end of this ramp into the underpass. And the player then tells him it's one of his teammates, and the researcher pursues this question and then draws attention to a box within this tunnel, in this tunnel. And then after this, the player pans across the tunnel, but states that the enemy player is dead. So what I'll do is we'll look through the video in three different ways. So if you look on your handouts, there's the kind of full transcript, if you like. One of the issues is actually trying to transcribe this kind of thing, which we've attempted some solution to. So we'll look through the video once. First, it'll be sort of the normal video. Then it'll be again, but with speech bubbles. And then I'll do it again, but with speech bubbles, but really, really slowed down, so you can sort of see what's going on. Right.
No, that's not going on.
That's one of my teammates. This guy's down there. I think they got him.
No, is he hiding behind a box? You see to the left, there's someone in the box.
He's dead.
No, that's not going on.
That's one of my teammates. This guy's down there. I think they got him.
No, is he hiding behind a box? You see to the left, there's someone in the box.
He's dead.
And again, really slowed down. So sorry about the quality of the video, it's not perfect, but... slowly down, like, because the movements are quite important. We'll come to that in a moment. I'll try and elaborate on what might be seen as quite complicated. So the manipulations by the player of the mouse and keyboard here, which you can't see, admittedly, in this shot, are really, really tightly coupled to the virtual camera perspectives. So I'll just try and explain a bit what this means. So firstly, remember, we're looking through the eyes of this player's virtual embodiment. He's moving the mouse, which rotates this virtual camera, around the player's current virtual location. And keyboard manipulations move this player's character around in space. Okay, so the first thing to note in this clip is the sense of visual organization of the graphical display itself and the role of the zoom in this, which we saw. So in this fragment, the player has zoomed in their sniper rifle and it's pointed towards the end of this tunnel or underpass, and although this weapon's got multiple zoom levels, the player then cycles this zoom to a greater level in order to further scrutinise the terrain ahead and just sort of just try and find out and work out what's actually happening. So after establishing this second level of zooming, the player then pans rightwards from one visible side of this underpass to the other, and the circle here, the scope circle here, makes the view sort of readily available to both the player and the researcher as an augmented or modified view. So this, as I mentioned earlier, this is sort of as opposed to this kind of view which you would normally have when you're not viewing through this scope. So the different levels of zooming offer different kinds of looking at the virtual terrain than this unaugmented view. So it provides a kind of smaller and more sensitive area for surveying and looking around and scrutinising just what is going on in, as you can sort of tell from the clip perhaps, quite a complicated, hard to understand thing. And through doing this sort of zooming, the player modifies just what may be seeable on the physical display and thus just what is accountable to between the player and the researcher. in their conduct, which we'll look at in more detail in a moment. So there's an achieved alignment here between the researcher and the player that's exhibited through their talk and action, and they're, as I said, collaboratively sort of scrutinising and trying to make sense of actions that are occurring elsewhere in this virtual environment. So it's often hard to see what's going on in this game, and what we're seeing here is kind of researcher and player not really sort of haven't really decided what it is they're seeing, and often sort of struggling to understand what they're seeing as analysts. And as we came to look at this data, we realised that a lot of the time video games, it's really hard for analysts to really understand what's actually going on in detail. Okay, so the second thing I want to draw attention to in playing the game, the player is producing sequences of camera perspectives via the zooming and panning. And these are done through manipulations of the keyboard and mouse. So the transcript that I provided on the first page is sort of an attempt to give a sense of the ongoing nature of that production. Okay, so I'll try and look a bit more closely at how this virtual camera features in talk and game actions. So firstly, the player zooms in and frames their shot such that the whole area of interest in this tunnel and its opposite opening is visible. So with the control over this virtual camera and zooming and panning, the player then makes relevant certain objects such as the box. So combined with framing the shot itself, zooming in also frames the area of interest and relevancy for the talk, so utterances are indexed by what relevancies are potentially indicated by this visual resource. So the zoomed in view here topicalises what is this visible area around the box as a feature for scrutiny. And the player and the researcher attempt to come into alignment over this. So for instance, the researcher suggests that there's something going on down there, which is heard as an invitation to elaborate for elaboration by the player. So here, sort of down there, takes its sense from a mutual orientation between the player and the researcher to the current position of the crosshairs and the general pointing of a virtual camera. So the production of this particular perspective by the player means that down there is seen relevant to what's being produced graphically in terms of this camera perspective, and ongoingly also as a sort of sequence of perspectives. And similarly, sort of the phrase, "Oh, that's one of my teammates," also takes its sense from the area of interest pointed at by the scope centre. So the player responds, sort of interspersing laughter in his utterance, "Oh, that's one of my teammates." And these sort of interjection of moments of laughter in the player's turn accounts for the fact that he has had his weapon pointed at a figure below the underpass, which he now sees as his teammate. Okay, so what happens next is the researcher then interjects, correcting this conclusion with, "Nah, is he?" Followed by further elaboration from the player, which Bray says, "This guy is down there, I think they got him." And that takes its sense from his talk about the teammate and his troubles in scrutinising just who it was that was under his crosshairs. So then the player zooms into a further level in a way that can be seen as a response to this ongoing trouble in scrutinising targets. So at just this moment, the extra magnification of this scope means, which is actually quite hard to see, I appreciate, means that the sort of graphical display has various movements and detritus, which you can kind of sort of see appearing there, and these are made more easily visible by this zooming in. And these, if you're an experienced player, these are sort of intelligible as visible evidence of some kind of combat occurring, such as someone dying, for instance, a player dying. So, next thing, also, as I said sort of earlier, the extra zoom also restricts now, having zoomed into a further level, what can actually be seen on the display. So what does the player do? Well, he combines this zoom with a pan of this underpass area, as you can see in these frames here. So the point here is that the talk's course is shaped by this sort of production of perspectives. So, for instance, we see the researcher's question later on, is he hiding behind that box, is then it's sort of reformulated after the player pans rightwards without response as to turns into, you see to the left there was someone in the box. So this reformulation is produced with a sensitivity to that panning movement of the camera as directed by the player. And so although attempting to redirect the player's scope back left now that it's right, the researcher also demonstrates acceptance that the enemy player is hiding behind this box and is no longer relevant, perhaps. So this reformulation, as you can see, is made in the past tense. So and the player then clarifies with, "No, he's dead." But what he also does at this at this point, he actually flicks, you can't see it here, but he actually flicks leftward slightly, so there's shared access to the box and the detritus, which kind of indicates that his resolution of this situation that the other player is dead is actually correct. Okay, so this is the next second fragment, which we'll look at, and this is from the game The Doctor Who Adventures. So here we have Eric, who's featuring as the dad, who's playing with his son Reuben. Eric is instructing slash sort of navigating, and Reuben is operating the keyboard and mouse. So they're playing this Doctor Who adventure game, and the players here sort of assume a range of different roles over the course of their play. But in this particular sequence, Eric the dad is what we'll call the navigator, and the son is the player. So it's rather similar to a kind of driver passenger type arrangement. So in this fragment, which we'll look at in a moment, the players are approaching a junction between two corridors. The player's moving the avatar using the keyboard. The player then stops moving the Doctor Who character and spins this camera around, which he's got control of via the mouse when he puts his hand on it. The navigator then asks which way they should be going, and the player eventually makes the camera come to rest on a particular perspective. And so we'll see a direct manipulation of the virtual camera with the mouse. So again, I'll do what I did before, play it three times.
Well, slow down! Right, slow down. Right, look that way. Right, go down the corner that way. Well, slow down! Right, slow down. Right, look that way. Right, go down the corner that way.
My voice is still breaking.
Pixar.
So the transcript is slightly different to this on there. I made a mistake. Okay, what's going on there? So, in contrast with the last fragment, what you can see here is a direct manipulation of the camera, virtual camera, with the mouse. So the virtual camera begins higher than the player's character initially, as I mentioned earlier, so it's a bit dark, apologies for that. But as the player approaches the junction, he stops the game's character movement and he switches to the mouse to adjust this virtual camera's perspective. And then the player sort of begins what can kind of be seen as a kind of sort of scan of the environment at this junction. So the junctions like this are quite commonplace in this game, and they're sort of a commonplace in which you would conduct this sort of scanning operation. So the junction itself is sort of seeable as presenting a set of prospective actions. So aligning to this, the player projects this switch and moves between keyboard and mouse at that point when he reaches the junction. So the camera here is spun around quite inelegantly and quickly from its existing position, and this scanning is sort of produced alongside an emerging question about where next to go. So this is kind of like a questioning scanning, which I think is sort of slightly like something mentioned by Eric Livingston of a questioning cue, where he describes as a sort of a cue turning into a kind of a mass of people from its linear sort of order, which is produced as the troubled response to a breach of social order. So the production of this questioning sort of scan alongside the emerging fragments of what sort of prospectively is a question occasions the navigator to intervene and respond to this visible trouble. And he sort of produces an instruction which indexes the camera motion, so you know, it says slow down. The navigator's interruption arrives as sort of a remedy to the visual problem of the camera's operation in its sort of this sort of scanning that's being produced by the player. But the crucial thing here is also that this interruption is produced in a timely way that's very sensitive to the production of camera perspectives. So the player produces this kind of just the right suitable perspective, and then the navigator organises his talk around this moment, as well as serving a response to the question. So this happens when the camera angle happens to be lower and provides perspectives along the corridors out of the windows. So it's an ideal sort of resource for answering this question of, you know, where am I going, where next? So as I sort of stated earlier, moving the camera here can be used as a preparation for further action. So this rest position provides for camera perspectives which offer resource for the next move. In this case, the next move is then for them to decide which way the player is to go. Again, apologies for this, how dark it is. So the navigator, having instructed the player to slow down, then instructs them to look the other direction. This new instruction, and simultaneously the prior instruction, are complied with via the player's production of this kind of smooth sweeping pan, which is much better than the first pan, at an appropriate angle and perspective to view this other corridor that they might want to go down. So in this way, this production of camera perspectives, a sweeping pan, provides an observable and reportable method for offering visible compliance with this instruction. Okay, so briefly summarising what we've looked at. Camera action is visible and accountable to both parties, but it's differently visible and must be resolved, and that's what we're seeing in these moments. The visual organisation of the screen as a static entity is also pretty important, so the way the scope looks makes certain kinds of scrutiny possible, as we saw in the first fragment. Manipulations of the controls, keyboard and mouse, produce particular sequences of perspectives from this virtual camera, which are enmeshed in the moment-by-moment production of social order and of playing together this game. And these sequences of perspectives are usually visually accountable to this order. So, as we saw with slow down, or how talk is formulated and then reformulated with respect to shared access to the visual resource, as we saw with the first fragment. So, the fourth point is that camera work here topicalizes relevant features of the, say, you know, the virtual environment, but it also may itself be a topic of conversation. So, this is the contrast perhaps between the first and the second fragments. So what we're doing is we're sort of further moving towards the sense in which the effects of interface manipulations and what's displayed graphically on screen forms part of the visual organisation of playing the game, and that these may be produced in conversationally oriented ways, so for instance using a camera pan or whatever as an answer or following instruction and so on. Visual resources as productions of camera manipulations can become framing resources for conversational actions in playing the game together. And so this is, I'd argue, perhaps similar to Lynch's example of people moving a heavy object down some stairs. So there's this nice quotation here, which I'll just read out. So Lynch says, the utterances in this case, as he's talking about this heavy object being moved down some stairs, acts as moments punctuating and coordinating the serial raising and lowering of the object. And they take on a pace and rhythm that is as much a function of the stairs as it is of any conversational mechanism. So what we want to sort of draw attention to and discuss is this a similar point to this, which is that the visual organisation of play is inextricably intermeshed with the organisation of talk and of conduct and so on. Thank you.
Thank you, Stuart. Thank you, Eric. Time for questions, observations. Andrew.
Quick one. I don't want, you probably already have noticed this, but as you're interested in spatial orientation, you know that this guy's down there. There's a possible interpretation of this guy's down, as in dead. Have you
possibly
got that one?
Yeah. No,
that it might not be a spatial orientation reference.
Yeah, that's possible. I think, again, a lot of this is to do with also how you sort of interpret the game, I guess, in your own experience of playing it. I think in this case, because it's that underpass tunnel area, you know, what they're looking at also, because of course they're looking at something remotely, so it makes more sense that it's down there. But I think your interpretation is interesting.
I'm just saying, this might be another one, might be useful,
yes,
and might not. I don't know.
That's a good point.
Yes, go ahead, dear.
Have you looked at the different ways in which the two participants experience a game, which, because only one of them has the controls, and then whether there's any implications for the way in which they really experience it and make sense of what's going on, because you experience a game differently when you actually move the camera, I suppose.
Do you mean it's particularly in the second?
Yeah, no, that was one of the things we were very interested in, was the sense that what, I guess, participation categories the playing the game was generating, in the sense that you're playing it together. So as part of that together, you have one person who is either sort of somewhat disinvolved, just observer, but then other points comes in for more sort of close forms of participation and falls into roles, like in the second game, where it's a sort of labyrinth-like game. One of the roles that's available to them is navigator, where that's, Stuart said sort of briefly, like a car. In the sense you've got one person driving who's got the controls, and the other person who then has the opportunity, while the other person's engaged in the play, to be sort of looking around and possibly providing other things that they've noticed to the person who's got a sort of central control of the game mechanic and maybe doing other things.
Thank you. I did do a lot of work by pointing where you wanted him to steer.
Yes, exactly. So you get that kind of intervention across the screen to try and get their attention. So yes, how the playing of the game then becomes distributed amongst people who may be trying to play it together, but on the same screen with one set of controls.
It depends on the type of game, of course, because the first type of game is very much a, you know, you can't play it together. So there's this, that's why there's this sort of observer, you know, player role rather than sort of co-playing.
I'll jump in if I may. There's some issues of countervailing entitlements as well. There's the entitlement of the person who's quote playing the game, because he or she has got the controls and it's her or his life, as it were, which is at risk. So they've got the entitlement to move around and be the person in whose interest the game is being played. And there's a potentially greater epistemic entitlement of a dad, the dad, who sort of knows better about some things. And possibly the researcher is not in a very clear position about whether, in this case, he knows more than the game player. So there's some interesting issues about how they resolve these countervailing epistemic authorities.
Yeah, I think it's very much a matter of expertise, definitely. I mean, also, I think, I suppose, different games require different levels of expertise as well. So I think the first type of game that we looked at is played to a ludicrously skilled level, where, you know, versus the second type of game, which is much more designed really for children, I suppose, isn't it? So it's less sort of expertise driven, arguably. But
yeah, but I guess what Charles was getting at as well, which is quite nice, and we did look at a bit, was that the counterplay between the epistemic authority of the dad, but also as a potentially sort of more knowledgeable party to how video games work and how they should be controlled. So some of the interest of children, of a child playing a game of that, was then issues around the dexterity with mouse and keyboard and so on, and sort of learning, so a nice learning situation of learning how to move the camera around.
In the first one, I know you were there and you were a researcher, but were you watching as a researcher or were you there as a co-watcher? Does that make sense?
I was there as a co-watcher.
You were as a co-watcher.
Yeah, so I mean, it was actually my brother, I should have said. I just happened to be interested in this game, and I thought, well, I'm going to video it because I think it's interesting what's going on. Also, I'd been playing the game, and he was much better than me. So part of the interaction that's going on there also is probably to do with, you know, me not being quite sure of what's going on naturally as a sort of game player, and so him having to explain what he's seeing. You know, so that's why it sort of comes out in that clip, I think.
Thank you. It's time for a handover. Thank you once more. Thank you.